This is sort of foundational, I think. We have recently completed the Days of Unleavened Bread and what they picture coming out of Egypt. But you would think that the people who experienced that exit from the bondage of Egypt would be fully aware, would be especially aware of God's existence and His presence. Didn't they realize the powerful reality of God's guidance? I mean, consider what they saw. Not only the death of all the firstborn, not only their release from bondage, not only passing through the Red Sea, which by the best estimation was 200 feet deep at the deepest point where they crossed, going east from Nueva. But for 40 years, they lived on manna with dependable regularity. It was there every morning except the Sabbath. They had to realize God's hand. They were under the cloud for 40 years. I didn't realize how long the cloud was with them, but for the entire time of the Exodus, the cloud was present and was visible. And when they had to march at night, the cloud turned luminescent like fire. It protected them. It stood over the tabernacle. It intensified at times when there were problems that needed to be addressed. They had to realize the ongoing miracle for a whole generation. They saw the entire Egyptian army wiped out before their eyes. They witnessed Mount Sinai and the giving of the law, and they heard a voice that scared them so much that they didn't want to hear it directly. They wanted it to God's word to come to them through Moses. They were frightened. And for an entire year, they saw water pour out of a rock, enough for up to 3 million people and all of their livestock. Yet, somehow, they weren't convinced that God meant business. They proved themselves, obviously, to be carnal, unfaithful, rebellious, disrespectful, and to an extreme degree, outright provocative. They tempted that God that did all these things for them. How could they not have realized the gravity of what they were doing? And yet, that was the experience. Exodus and Numbers explain a lot of the problems that happened in what we call the wilderness years. And today I want to bring out what we could call our wilderness years. Because there is something that happens after the days of unleavened bread. And we know what those picture. They picture putting sin out of our lives. But it doesn't end there. That's not the culmination. There's something more. There is a period of time after that, but before we receive the promise. They remained in the vicinity of Mount Sinai for more than a year. We don't always realize that. But it was a year during which they constructed the tabernacle according to God's instructions. And they began to operate under a new set of laws. They were given the commandments. They were carved in stone, supernaturally. They could see what God had carved in slabs of rock. No doubt everyone there saw those tablets of stone. And they realized what they were and where they came from and how it came to be. They began to operate under a new set of laws and statutes and judgments, which they didn't have before. While they were there at the plains below Mount Sinai, they had a full year's training getting established in the covenant that they had made. In Numbers 10, verses 11 and 12, it tells us that they left Sinai a little more than a year after they arrived there. It was on the 20th day of the second month of the second year. The original intent that God had for them was to receive their inheritance in the promised land just a few months later. They traveled from Mount Sinai to the wilderness of Paran, and that's in Numbers 10, verse 12, which was, best we can determine, about 180 miles, which would have taken them 6 days to move from Sinai to Paran. And while they were there, they sent out spies to assess the land. Let's look at Numbers chapter 13. Because this was a critical point in their experience, we could say. Numbers 13, beginning in verse 16. Well, I'm going to start in verse 1. And the Lord spoke unto Moses, saying, send you men, that they may search the land of Canaan, which I give unto the children of Israel. Of every tribe of their fathers shall you send a man, every one a ruler among them. So they picked out principal men, reliable people, to go and search out the land. Over to verse 17. And Moses sent them to spy out the land of Canaan, and said unto them, get you up this way southward, and go up unto the mountain, and see the land, what it is, and the people that dwelleth therein, whether they be strong or weak, few or many, and what the land is that they dwell in, whether it be good or bad, and what cities they be that they dwell in, whether in tents or in strongholds, and what the land is, whether it be fat or lean, whether there be wood therein or not, and be ye good of good courage, and bring the fruit of the land. Now the time was ripe. The time of the first ripe grapes. So we know approximately the season of the year. It must have been about the third month of the year. So they went up and searched the land. And make his long story short, verse 25. And they returned from searching of the land after 40 days. We'll find that's a key number. 40 days. And they went out and came to Moses and Aaron and to all the congregation of the children of Israel into the wilderness of Paran to Kadesh and brought back word unto them and unto all the congregation and showed them the fruit of the land. And they told him and said, we came into the land whither you sent us, and surely it flows with milk and honey. God's word was good. He wasn't leading them on. And they said, this is the fruit of it. Nevertheless, the people be strong that dwell in the land. And the cities are walled and very great. And moreover, we saw the children of Anak there. Big dudes. The Amalekites dwelt in the land of the south, and the Hittites and the Jebusites and the Amorites dwell in the mountains, and the Canaanites dwelt by the sea and by the coast of Jordan. And Caleb stilled the people before Moses and said, let us go up at once to possess it, for you are well able to overcome it. But the other men that went up with them said, we be not able to go against the people, for they are stronger than we. And they brought up an evil report of the land which they had searched unto the children of Israel, saying, the land through which we have gone to search it is a land that eats up the inhabitants thereof. And all the people that we saw in the region are men of great stature. And there we saw the giants, the sons of Anak, which come out of the giants, and we were in our own sight as grasshoppers. And so we were in their sight. They could squash us like bugs. You see the muscles on them guys? No. We ain't doing that. Chapter 14. And all the congregation lifted up their voice and cried, and the people wept that night. And all the children of Israel murmured against Moses and against Aaron, and the whole congregation said unto them, would God that we had died in the land of Egypt, or would God that we had died in this wilderness. We'd rather be dead than do what God is asking us to do. He wants to give us something. They're looking out for something else. Looking out for their own hide. They didn't think they could do it. Why? Because they lacked something. Verse 3, and wherefore has the Lord brought us unto this land to fall by the sword, that our wives and our children should be a prey? Were it not better for us to return unto Egypt? Well, that's a key idea. Keep that in mind. And they said one to another, let us make a captain and let us return unto Egypt. That Moses, and how are they going to get back across the Red Sea? But anyway, let us return unto Egypt. And Moses and Aaron fell on their faces before all the assembly of the congregation of the children of Israel. And Joshua the son of Nun and Caleb the son of Phunah, which were of them that searched the land, rent their clothes. And they spoke unto all the company of the children of Israel, saying, the land which we passed through to search it is exceeding good. If the Lord delight in us, then he will bring us into this land and give it us, a land which flows with milk and honey. Only rebel you not against the Lord, neither fear you the people of the land, for they are bread for us. Their defense is departed from them, and the Lord is with us. Fear them not. Interesting that term, for they are bread for us. I wonder if that's an old expression for saying what we say. It would be a piece of cake. I wonder. But all the congregation bade stone them with stones. And the glory of the Lord appeared. Now, here's something interesting. But the glory of the Lord appeared in the tabernacle of the congregation before all the children of Israel. There's another passage that describes what that was talking about. But it describes the cloud. The cloud was with them. And by this time, the cloud was residing over the tabernacle. And we'll bring this up at our next Bible study. The study of the cloud is very interesting. But by this time, the cloud resided at the tabernacle. It was either over it, or in it, or in front of it. In this case, that cloud intensified as this situation was going on. Now, you'd think that would get people's attention, that God maybe isn't happy with their reaction. Didn't seem to matter, though. They wanted to stone. these people who had a positive report. Verse 11, "And the Lord said unto Moses, How long will this people provoke me? And how long will it be before they believe me for all the sights which I have shown among them?" And I gave you some of those. The manna, the Red Sea crossing, the water out of the rock, the cloud's presence continually. "The signs which I have shown among them, I will smite them with the pestilence and disinherit them and will make of you a greater nation and a mightier than they." Now here's something that people don't always think about. At that point, God had a mind to destroy them all and to create a new nation through Moses and his children. What a catastrophe that would have been after all these people, after all their experience, after all they went through, after making the covenant with God. They provoked God continually and severely. And God was going to wipe them all out. 3 million people. Moses realized the implication of that. And we read in verse 13 his reaction. "And Moses said unto the Lord, Then the Egyptians shall hear of it, for you brought up this people in thy might from among them. And they will tell it to the inhabitants of this land, for they have heard that you are among this people, that the Lord art seen face to face, and that thy cloud stands over them, and that thou goest before them by daytime in a pillar of cloud and a pillar of fire by night." This was still going on. Many months later, the nations around knew this. They had heard reports. Now, if God were to destroy that whole nation, think what they would think. Not only of God, but of His ability to accomplish His intentions. Verse 15, "Now if you shall kill all this people as one man, then the nations which have heard of your fame will speak, saying, Because the Lord was not able to bring this people into the land which we swear unto them, therefore he has slain them in the wilderness." This would reflect badly on God. This is where Moses intervened. "And now I beseech you, let the power of my Lord be great according as you have spoken, saying, The Lord is long-suffering and of great mercy, forgiving iniquity and transgression, by no means clearing the guilty, visiting the iniquity of the fathers upon the children unto the third and fourth generation. Pardon, I beseech you, the iniquity of this people according to the greatness of thy mercy. And as thou hast forgiven this people from Egypt even until now." And the Lord relented of his stated intention. Verse 20, "And the Lord said, I have pardoned according to your word. But as truly as I live, all the earth shall be filled with the glory of the Lord. Because all those men which have seen my glory and my miracles, which I did in Egypt and in the wilderness, and have tempted me now these 10 times, and have not listened to my voice, surely they shall not see the land which I swear unto their fathers, neither shall any of them that provoked me see it." This is the point in time where God determined that the adult generation, those who came out of Egypt 20 years and older, would die in the wilderness and would not see the promised land. Only the younger generation would live to see it. So God assigned to them 40 years, or actually 39 more years of wandering in the wilderness until they all expired. This was on account of a very serious flaw in their character. You see, they were still oriented to the Egyptian culture in which they had all grown up, generations living in Egypt. We have grown up in a culture that, like Dusty explained, was satanic culture. We have an element within ourselves that is reflective of our background. That too we need to recognize and eliminate from our lives. You see, now that we have been baptized, now that we have put sin out of our lives, not only for 7 days, but for the entirety of our life, I mean, we practice the days of unleavened bread every year as a reminder, but this is a commitment for the entirety of our life. The interval from our baptism through to the day of Pentecost is what we could call a short form illustration of an important biblical truth. Putting sin out of our lives at the beginning is not all of it. We must endure through to the end. And their 40 years in the wilderness is what we could call a long form representation of the same basic principle. They made the covenant too. They were baptized too in the Red Sea and under the cloud. Paul makes reference to that. But they didn't have the faith to carry through to the end. They didn't have the faith to believe God's promises. They saw the land. They sent out representatives. Someone from every tribe, someone of great reputation, saw the land. They spied it out. They came back with a report. And the people didn't have the faith to believe God and to follow Him in what He originally intended. One thing that's interesting about the wilderness experience, if we could call it that, is how much reference there is to it in the New Testament. We're going to be looking at a number of places. But one thing is especially insightful is where God showed that their experience was more relevant to us than it was to them. We'll come to that passage. Let's look at 2 Corinthians 5, verse 7. 2 Corinthians 5, where it says, "For we walk by faith, not by sight." You see, the children of Israel in the wilderness of Paran were walking by sight, not by faith. You would think that after all they had seen, they would at least have some measure of faith, but apparently not. They became disillusioned. And in a message probably twice from now, I want to talk about disillusionment. But they became disillusioned. The reports that they were getting were not what they expected. The challenges that were offered to them didn't match up with their expectations. And we have to think about that. What expectation does a new convert have? Someone just being baptized can think that conversion is to make for an easier life. And then reality comes in. We find out that that's not the case. It's through much tribulation that we enter the family. Why tribulation? Why would being baptized introduce us to a whole bunch of new challenges that we never expected? Why? To build faith. And the exercise of that faith to solidify our character. This is something that isn't commonly realized. But as we read in Numbers 14, Moses had to intervene to prevent the rejection of those faithless people. It was God's intent to create a righteous nation. And he realized he couldn't do it with those people. Now I just wonder if there's a parallel with the Judaic world versus the Christian world. You would think that the most convertible people would be the Jewish people. You would think. Doesn't seem to be working out that way. And we have to wonder, is there a parallel with the wilderness experience and the world situation as we see it today? That adult generation, who should have known better, were allowed to all die out. In 1 Corinthians 10, verse 11, Paul makes reference to this very situation. He says, "Now all of these things happened unto them for examples, and they are written for our admonition, upon whom the ends of the world are come." What is Paul telling us? He's effectively saying that those experiences of the children of Israel in the wilderness had less value to them than it does to us today. Those experiences illustrate situations that we need to assess of ourselves in what we could call our wilderness years. Because from the time we're converted until the time that we're raised into the family of God as spirit beings, there is a span of time. In the count to Pentecost, it's illustrating a full lifetime, our spiritual lifetime. In the wilderness experience, the 40 years represents basically a full physical lifetime. Though we're converted, we still have to endure to the end. That's obligatory. We have to have the faith of Christ. And we have to exercise that faith to build his character. In Acts 6, beginning in verse 8. Acts 6, verse 8. Stephen weighs in on this. And it's interesting how much reference there is in the New Testament to the wilderness experience. Acts 6, I'm going to start in verse 8. "And Stephen, full of faith and power, did great wonders and miracles among the people. Then there arose certain of the synagogue, which is called the synagogue of the Libertines and Cyrenians and the Alexandrians, and of them of Cilicia and of Asia, disputing with Stephen, and they were not able to resist the wisdom and the spirit by which he spoke. Then they suborned men, which said, "We have heard him speak blasphemous words against Moses and against God." And they stirred up the people and the elders and the scribes and came upon him and caught him and brought him to the council. And set up false witnesses, which said, "This man ceases not to speak blasphemous words against this holy place and the law." Now, the passage that I want is in the next chapter. Then said the high priest, "Are these things so?" And he said, "Men and brethren and fathers, listen. The God of glory appeared unto our father Abraham when he was in Mesopotamia, before he dwelt in Charan, and said unto him, 'Get you out of your country and from your kindred, and come into the land which I shall show you.' Then came he out of the land of the Chaldeans and dwelt in Charan. And from there, when his father was dead, he removed him unto the land which wherein you now dwell. And he gave him none inheritance in it, no, not so much as to set foot on. Yet he promised that he would give him for a possession and to a seed after him, when as yet he had no child." I'm going to move down to verse 17. "But when the time of the promise drew nigh, which God had sworn unto Abraham, the people grew and multiplied in Egypt, till another king arose, which knew not Joseph. The same dwelt subtly with our kindred, and evil entreated our fathers, so that they cast out their young children, to the end they might not live. In which time Moses was born, and exceeding fair and nourished, up in his father's house 3 months." Going to move down to, I'm going to skip ahead here. Verse 51, speaking to these people that are putting him on trial. "You stiff-necked and uncircumcised in heart and ears, you do always resist the Holy Spirit. As your fathers did, so did you. Which of the prophets have your fathers not persecuted? And they have slain them, which showed before the coming of the Just One, of whom you have been now betrayers and murderers." Stephen was referring to the nature of these people. Supposedly God's chosen people, but yet they were not oriented to God's ways at all. Israel in the wilderness was still oriented to their religious culture that developed in Egypt. Their hearts were still in Egypt, even though their physical bodies weren't. Their wilderness experiences, as Paul brings out, illustrated many considerations we encounter in our Christian life. Those experiences include being committed to leaving sin, trusting God's leadership, stepping out confidently in faith, committing to baptism, making an irreversible covenant with God, not looking back with a desire to return, living separate from the world. While Israel was in the wilderness, they weren't interfacing with any other cultures or societies. They were pretty much out there on their own. They lived separately. We need to enter into a God-ordained worship system. That's what they were supposed to be doing. Overcoming doubts and fears through faith. Enduring doubtful companions, what we could call naysayers. There was many of them among them. supporting fellow travelers in God's way, defeating hostile forces, avoiding spiritual traps, there were many, dealing with disillusionments, working to protect the integrity of the family, and there were many laws of exclusion. When people did certain things, they were to be expelled from the camp to protect the integrity of the nation. And one thing we learn from Numbers 14 is that God can and will reject the unfaithful for the sake of the family. What we need to learn from the wilderness years is keeping focused on the ultimate goal. In Numbers 14:22, we read earlier that this was the 10th time that they had tempted God. The 10th time, over and over. I'm sure he corrected them, but somehow it didn't get through. So after this final reaction to the reports of the situation in the land that they were supposed to inherit right then and there, God wasn't of a mind to forgive them. Hebrews 4 also reflects on this situation. Hebrews 4, 1 through 6. And this is the experience that this chapter is referring to. In verse 1, let us therefore fear lest the promise being left of us of entering into his rest, any of you should seem to come short of it. For unto us was the gospel preached, as well as unto them. But the word preached did not profit them, not being mixed with faith in them that heard it. That was the problem. For which we which have believed to enter into rest, as he said, as I have sworn in my wrath, if they shall enter into my rest, although the works were finished from the foundation of the world. For he spoke in a certain place of the seventh day on this wise, and God did rest the seventh day from all his works. And in this place again, if they shall enter into my rest. Seeing therefore it remains that some must enter therein, and they to whom it was first preached entered not in because of unbelief. That was the condition of the children of Israel in the wilderness. The promised land represented that rest that he was referring to. See, once they were in the land, once they had possession of it, once the nation had been established there, they could have rested from all of their wandering, all of the uncertainty. Faith in the promises was key to entering into his rest. But except for a few, they just didn't believe it. That faith wasn't in them. In 1 Corinthians 10, verse 11, there is this insightful passage, and this is what I referred to earlier. Let's expand the picture here. In keeping with Paul's premise that the experience of the children of Israel in the wilderness were more for us to learn from, with regard to our personal quest for salvation, then we need to realize that there are some profound comparisons. Here's what Paul wrote in 1 Corinthians 10. Now all of these things happened unto them for examples, and they are written for our admonition, upon whom the ends of the world are come. Paul is referring to those wilderness years. All the lessons all the situations that develop, the faithlessness, the desire to go back to Egypt, the rebellion against Moses' leadership, Korah's rebellion, and the earth opening up and swallowing that whole contingent of people. Didn't they get the message? Didn't they see? Appears not. Stephen refers to the same situation, Acts 7:35. Did we just look at that? Acts 7. It's in my notes again. 7:35. Yeah, this is that same situation in the wilderness. This Moses, whom they refused, saying, "Who made you a ruler and a judge?" The same did God send to be a ruler and a deliverer by the hand of the angel which appeared unto him in the bush. He brought them out after that he had shown wonders and signs in the land of Egypt, and in the Red Sea, and in the wilderness 40 years. This is that Moses which said unto the children of Israel, "A prophet shall the Lord your God raise up unto you of your brethren like unto me, him you shall hear." This is he that was in the church in the wilderness with the angel which spoke to him in the Mount Sinai, and with our fathers who received the lively oracles to give unto us, to whom our fathers would not obey, but thrust him from them, and in their hearts turned back again into Egypt, saying unto Aaron, "Make us gods to go before us. For as for this Moses, we who brought us out of the land of Egypt, we don't know what's happened to him." And they made a calf in those days, and offered sacrifice unto the idol, and rejoiced in the works of their own hands. Then God turned and gave them up to worship the host of heaven, as it is written in the book of the prophets, "O you house of Israel, have you offered unto me slain beasts and sacrifices by the space of 40 years in the wilderness? Yea, you took up the tabernacle of Moloch and the altar of your god Remphan, figures which you made to worship them, and I will carry you away beyond Babylon. Our fathers had the tabernacle of witness in the wilderness, as he had appointed, speaking unto Moses that he should make it according to the fashion that he had seen." Stephen also is explaining their shortcomings. They had it all. They had the tabernacle. They saw the cloud. They drank the water. They passed through the Red Sea. They had manna every morning. And another second miracle happened, that what they gathered on Friday lasted through all of the Sabbath, where it wouldn't happen any other day. Miracle after miracle, and yet they didn't have the faith to stand through. We have to wonder about Stephen's statement about turning back again to Egypt. What on earth were they desiring to want to do that? Now, we could reflect on someone who leaves the faith, someone who wants to turn back into the world, and we have to wonder, what did they not get when they were called, when they were given God's Spirit? Why would they want to go back into the world? And yet, how many do that? It's sad, but it happens. We can retain many religious concepts that we learned in our earlier life. Sometimes they hang in there in the back of our minds. We don't realize it. And they come to the fore every once in a while. We need to recognize Egypt in whatever form it comes to us. We just rehearsed putting sin out of our lives. They needed Egypt out of their minds. They had kept Egypt in their hearts. Somehow that was more real to them. We see those actions in the golden calf incident. Their hearts were still in Egypt, even if their physical bodies weren't. They hadn't left the culture behind, and thus couldn't be counted on to keep the covenant that they'd supposedly committed themselves to. In Exodus 24:7, it says, "All that the Lord has said, we will do." I'm sure they said that, and I'm sure they said it enthusiastically. All that the Lord has said, we will do. We will be faithful to the end. They didn't want to hear God's voice directly. It scared the tar out of them. They asked for Moses to relay his word to them from God. But then they rejected Moses. Not only were they dismissive or casual towards God's commandments, but as Stephen said, where we just read, they thrust him from them. They thrust God out of their lives. Can we see the reason for their rejection? After all, they were married to the Lord. Jeremiah 3:14 says that. Do we see a similarity in religion today? Oh, yes, religious, very religious. But generally rejective of God's commanded convocations. They refuse to assemble before him on his holy days. They have better ideas. They have better ideas. Don't need to do that stuff. Paul in Acts 13 shows us that their attitudes didn't change all through the 40 years. Acts 13:18-19. Acts 13:18. I'm going to start in 17. "And God of this people of Israel chose our fathers and exalted the people when they dwelt as strangers in the land of Egypt. And with an high arm brought he them out of it. And about the time of 40 years suffered he their manners in the wilderness." It's not referring to good manners. "And when he had destroyed seven nations in the land of Canaan, he divided their land to them by lot." We may equate the wilderness years with continuing life after our baptism. These are our wilderness years. Once we have made the covenant with God, we are now ourselves wandering through life. We don't always know where to go. We don't always know the right way. We have a source that will tell us. But the experience of Israel in the wilderness gives us many, many experiences from which we can learn. In Revelation 17, verse 14, we see reference to people who are called and chosen and faithful. And I would acquaint those conditions with those people who are interested, those people who become dedicated, and those people who endure through to the end. It says, "He is Lord of lords and King of kings, and they that are with him are called, chosen, and faithful." Are called, chosen, and faithful. It gives those three conditions. How do we conduct ourselves in the years following baptism? Those decades that remain once we have made our life commitment to do all that the Lord has said. We've effectively said the same thing. We could find ourselves wandering if we don't remain committed to what we signed up for. Hebrews 3, 1 to 11 wraps this up very nicely. Hebrews 3. And there's a rather lengthy passage here, but we'll just cover this portion of it. It would be good to read those several chapters. Hebrews 3, starting in verse 1. Wherefore, holy brethren, partakers of the heavenly calling, consider the apostle and high priest of our profession, Jesus Christ, who was faithful to him that appointed him, as also Moses was faithful in all his house. For this man was counted worthy of more glory than Moses, inasmuch as he has builded the house, has more honor than the house. Verse 5, and Moses truly was faithful in all his house as a servant, for a testimony of those things which are to be spoken after. But Christ as a son over his own house, whose house are we, if we hold fast the confidence and the rejoicing of the hope firm unto the end? Wherefore, as the Holy Spirit says, today, if you will hear his voice, harden not your hearts, as in the provocation, in the day of temptation in the wilderness, when your fathers tempted me, proved me, and saw my works 40 years. Wherefore I was grieved with that generation and said, they do always err in their hearts, and they have not known my ways. So I swear in my wrath, they shall not enter into my rest. Do you see the comparison with their wilderness years and our wilderness years? It's interesting to note how much of the New Testament is reflective of these wilderness experiences. That denial of rest can apply to anyone. We need to recognize that we are in our wilderness years, and we need to act accordingly.